1480 AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app. Welcome to this special broadcast of President Joe Biden's State of the Union Address. Civic Media is providing you with live, comprehensive coverage tonight.
Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show, and Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief Stuart J. Waddles will monitor the address, then break down the president's priorities and what it means for you.
Now, here's live coverage of the State of the Union Address and your hosts, Maggie Dawn and Stuart J. Waddles.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civic Media's coverage of the State of the Union Address. Like the announcer voice just said, I'm Stuart J. Waddles, the, what do we call me now? The Bureau Chief. I like Bureau Chief, Maggie. I like that a lot.
Let's go with it.
Maggie Dawn is here with us. Anya's on the other side of the glass. And we're just going to kind of interpret what's going on, kind of preview what's going on. We're here in the Waukesha studios. We got a crew in Madison, and then we're sending it out statewide. La Crosse, Eau Claire, Green Bay. Thanks for checking in. Maggie, let's start at the beginning, or maybe we should start at the end. Is this going to matter, the State of the Union?
Yes. In my opinion, in terms of modern State of the Union addresses, this is probably the most important State of the Union easily in the last 20 years. And the reason I say that is largely because there's been so much ink spilt and talking head time around Joe Biden's energy, vitality, etc. And he killed it last year in the State of the Union. He basically shot down some hecklers, made the Republicans in public agree to maintain Social Security, even though Senator Ron Johnson, Wisconsin's own, has said in many a time that he wants to make Social Security part of the annual budgeting process. So he killed it last year. It's incredibly important that he has an excellent A-grade performance today. I also expect the heckling to be out of control, despite Speaker Mike Johnson's admonitions in a private meeting yesterday to the GOP caucus.
And I think there was another meeting today that I was just reading about decorum and how they're going to try and not kind of throw out the "you lies" and the "how dare yous" and things like that. So we're going to air the speech. It looks like, from what I'm seeing, the president's still in the motorcade. And there was some protesters between the White House and the Capitol. I think that problem was cleared up. President's still in the motorcade on his way. The justices are in the building right now. So they're just kind of gathering and waiting for the president's arrival. We will carry the Republican response tonight. So that's also on the agenda. Maggie, let's just pretend you're writing this speech. You're targeting Wisconsin voters. What's your main theme? What are you kind of hoping to get as the main thrust of the entire speech?
Make America normal again. That's where I start. Listen, the folks that are watching the State of the Union are smart. They may not have the time to devote to the detail here, but don't speak down to people. Speak exactly the truth. Talk about democracy. Talk about women's issues. Again, we have and we should have protected and we should have federal protections for women's right to select their health care. I think he's got to hit that hard. I think he also has to speak to voters in Wisconsin and likewise in a lot of swing states about the economy. And he needs to make his case very clear. Own Bidenomics and explain to people exactly why it's working. Donald Trump had one crisis. That was it. And a million people died because he couldn't bring himself to tell the truth. And as a result of that, he plunged our economy into a near recession, right? And what Biden has been able to do to restore growth, to have wage growth now exceeding inflation, and of course that done because of Joe Biden's willingness to stand shoulder to shoulder with union members and the reinvigoration of the labor movement in the United States, he needs to bring this case affirmatively to voters in Wisconsin and likewise in the other swing states.
Do you think crime enters that same kind of discussion about how people think that it might be out of control, but he may point to some other numbers similar to what you're saying about the economy? Do you think he tries to make a push tonight?
Yeah, I don't know whether or not crime, quote unquote, ranks. What will rank and what he does need to address is immigration. What his administration has done, I think he needs to take on directly and look directly at the members of the GOP, particularly in the House caucus, that have done Donald Trump's bidding. to stop a bipartisan immigration bill that is the strongest immigration bill, frankly, the stuff of GOP dreams, and basically said, Donald Trump, we'll bow in fealty to you and we won't move on this so that you can run on immigration. He needs to speak to the facts. Cities with large number of immigrants actually have lower crime rates, especially lower violent crime rates than the cities that have fewer immigrants and migrants. So again, you have to blend the rhetoric with the facts, but he needs to be making an affirmative case while taking on the lies of Donald Trump. Listen, what he's going to be looking at is a rogues gallery of grovelers. Mitch McConnell, the last to fall. I think, Anya, we've got a little bit of sound of Mitch McConnell taking on Donald Trump and his responsibility for January 6th right after it occurred. Let's listen to Mitch.
Dereliction of duty. The House accused the former president of, quote, incitement. That is a specific term from the criminal law. Let me just put that aside for a moment and reiterate something I said to stop a specific piece of domestic business they did not like. Fellow Americans beat and bloodied our own police. They stormed the Senate floor. They tried to hunt down the Speaker of the House. January 6th was a disgrace. American citizens attacked their own government. They used terrorism to try to stop a specific piece of domestic business they did not like.
And in that speech, McConnell goes on to say that Donald Trump bears responsibility. If we can find that specific sound, Anya, I'd like to have people listen to that. Because yesterday, Mitch McConnell endorsed Donald Trump for president. Again, it's a rogues gallery of grovelers. There is no leaders left in the GOP. It is not the GOP. It's not the Grand Old Party. It's not the Republican Party. It's the MAGA Party. And he needs to take that on directly.
Yeah, and kind of going to these things that we're talking about, these major issues, they're kind of they're played out in these guests that are brought along to the address. The 4th District Congresswoman Gwen Moore brought Tanya Atkinson, the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. So she'll be there tonight. First Lady Jill Biden has a guest from Texas, Kate Cox,
yes,
a woman who fled the state for abortion care. So those are some of the issues, again, where the people kind of represent of what's going on. Do you also know about Senator Tammy Baldwin's guest?
I don't actually know Senator Baldwin's guest. And just on this point about Kate Cox joining from the state of Texas in the First Lady's box, she's also being joined by LaTorra Beasley, who is the Alabama mother whose IVF treatments were halted after the Alabama Supreme Court found that embryos are people and therefore you could not have IVF treatments. The interesting point about that, and then I want to hear about Senator Baldwin's guest, is that the GOP response today is coming from Senator Kate Britt, a Republican from Alabama, who has sort of danced around the Alabama Supreme Court ruling. We expect to hear her take that up in her response remarks. So not lost on anybody that the First Lady and others, including Representative Moore, are really leaning into women's freedom to choose health care for themselves.
Well, and that's kind of been on display with the visits to the state by Kamala Harris, by Jill Biden. These are the themes that they're bringing up and that they're going to. Senator Tammy Baldwin's guest tonight, the chief of police from right here in Waukesha, Daniel Thompson. Together they penned an op-ed about the fentanyl crisis. So that's kind of what she's trying to shine a spotlight on. Do you think the president brings up anything in that realm tonight?
You know, that's an interesting question. I there's so much to cover, right? And I don't see Joe Biden going much over an hour. I think he's going to be 60 minutes or under.
Vegas has got it at 65 minutes.
65 minutes. Well, I'm going to take the under.
You're
on
gonna
that
go
over.
The under?
I'm going to go under. If you want to text in on the, on
over
the text
and under.
Line, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789.
I'm joining you on the under.
Yes. We are now seeing, depending on the coverage that you're watching, the vice president's husband is entering the chamber. That's Doug Emhoff.
And Kamala Harris and the Speaker of the House seem very congenial. They're shaking hands. They're laughing at each other. They're smiling. Some words being exchanged between them.
That's good to see. I mean, nobody thinks Mike Johnson's a jerk.
No.
Right? That's not the problem with Mike Johnson. The problem with Mike Johnson is that he wants to turn the clock back to the early 1900s. It's not lost on me, and certainly I don't think for any of our listeners, First of all, Kamala Harris and Mike Johnson just met in the Oval Office over the government shutdown negotiations. Mm-hmm. And considering Mike Johnson's statements about we need to get back to 18th century values, the fact that a woman and a black woman, the first African, Asian, American ever elected to the vice presidency is sitting to his immediate right must be quite the counterpoint to those 18th century values that he chooses to espouse so frequently.
First lady making her way into the chamber this evening. I believe that was Pat Leahy. Pat Leahy in the audience. No longer a senator, right?
No, Pat's been gone for a while, but certainly a leader. Again, if you're watching C-SPAN, you're seeing the senator from Arizona.
The other notes that I'm just getting in, Senator Fetterman is not in attendance. I guess last year there were some problems. Now we're getting a gavel. So maybe we you got anything on your end, Anya? Anya on the production, and there might not be something coming up. Maybe.
I'm getting some sound here.
Yeah, let's just roll with this until we hear the sergeant at arms, William McFarland. Again, for now, they're just kind of getting the cabinet coming in.
If you were a sergeant at arms, I would expect your name to be something like William McFarland. It just sounds sergeant at armsy, doesn't it?
Born for the job.
Absolutely.
Again, Jill Biden, we talked about one of her guests. She must know somebody. She's got 20 guests tonight.
Yeah,
so she's got quite a list. One of them, Rashawn Spivey of Milwaukee.
Yes, I saw that
on
the list.
He's a plumber. He's been replacing some lead lines. I believe he was a guest of the president when he was in Milwaukee.
Yes,
the president stopped by. Yes,
he was, because part of the president's agenda, an ambitious goal at that, is to ensure that all lead pipes are replaced in the country. Well, what an audacious goal. Certainly something that everyone would do well to help get accomplished. Again, we've got one of Milwaukee's own, a Wisconsinite, sitting in the First Lady's box. She basically has guests coming into a couple of categories. Again, women's right to choose their health care. There's a number of guests. I'm counting around five guests that represent that viewpoint.
What's going to be the Republican counter?
Again, it's going to be Senator Kate Britt doing a tap dance.
I know tonight, but yep. Just long-term campaign, when they're out, the Democrats are out there pushing this, what are the Republicans going to come back with? What are they going to be able to at least tell voters that might not agree with them at this point to try and soothe them over?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's not much of a response. We just saw Interior Secretary Pete Buttigieg walking into the chamber. I believe he's standing next to Representative Moore at the moment.
And it appears that, is it just the Democrat women that are wearing white?
Yes. So okay. The Democratic Women's Caucus wearing white. You frequently see this in large sessions of Congress. That's basically a representation of the women's movement as well. Most of the Democratic Women's Caucus also wearing pins, advocating for a woman's right to choose, trying to, again, take this issue and make it front and center. I think it is an issue that Democrats should continue to run on and like roll the tape back. Right. In other words, shove the president, the former presidents, shove the words of all of these different candidates that have said the most extreme things about women's health care. Run the tapes, make them eat their words, because now the tap dance is occurring, right? Abortion in no circumstance. Well, maybe rape and incest, right? And it goes on and on. And we're going to see that again from Senator Kate Britt in the Republican response, senator from Alabama. Worthy of note, she's the youngest senator ever. She's 42. Pretty remarkable. She's also, unsurprisingly, the first female senator from Alabama.
And she's not one of the names that you've heard kind of thrown around for that vice president role on the Republican side.
Though many consider this to be a pseudo audition of sorts.
But have they ever really worked out when that seems like that's always the, well, this person, we're going to give them the response. And then 3 or 4 years later, well, where are you?
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like being the number one round draft pick.
Yeah.
It often does not work out right. Well for the number one first pick in the draft.
Very apt. I like it.
Thank you. Yeah. Little sports and politics, yeah, bringing like it all together. So again, I really do think that the way that she tries to address that is going to be fascinating. One of the things that I always have found lacking about party response, whether coming from the Democratic or the Republican side over the years is that it tends to be in platitudes as opposed to specific policy platform rebuttals. That's what I would like to see. So much of what we hear from Republicans these days is basically like blunderbuss. It's just sort of this a lot of bloviating, these general statements, very little grounding in specific policy initiatives. Of course, Donald Trump ran without a published platform in 2020, right? And there's a good reason for this. The man changes what he says about things on a nearly daily basis. He doesn't ever stay on message, can't read the teleprompter. So it's very hard for a party to coalesce around specific policy ideas. But again, I expect to see more of that sort of blunderbuss generalities from Senator Britt in the rebuttal.
And that's kind of what I was getting at earlier, just watching Kamala Harris and the speaker talking to each other like they're friendly at least. And I think that something can go a long way with putting this on TV, putting these two people in a room and just talk and communicate. And I think that there's a lot that could be done with that. And I don't think the debates help in this arena because it turns into more of a hurting the cats, I think is how they call it.
Yeah, hurting the cats
but
while sitting in a rocking chair.
Have
yes.
two people of just disagreeing that it just, again, it's weird to see these two people together looking happy and talking and kind of just enjoying each other's company almost. And it's strange that that's strange. I don't like that that's strange. And it is. And I wish that it wasn't. And that's, I kind of getting what you're talking about. You don't get to talk in platitudes that way. You don't get to throw the bombs. You don't get to kind of be that rough when you've got a human in front of you. And you've got to come to some agreement and at least talk to each other like you're normal.
Yeah, that's why I think debates have largely devolved into irrelevancy, sort of showmanship one-liners.
We
just watched Secretary of Defense Lloyd J. Austin chamber.
Yep. We just missed the announcement. You want to try it?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yep. This guy looks like a sergeant at arms.
President Joseph R. Biden.
William McFarland just made the announcement, so the president is in the building, starting the glad handing. Like you said earlier, if you're watching this or listening at this point, you're hardcore. You've seen these things before.
Right.
You know how they work. You get a bunch of politicians that are interested in kind of getting on that camera and being seen a little bit, and
it's literally pressing of flesh, followed immediately by Chuck Schumer. You can see Hakeem Jeffries.
Let's put you in Congress, Maggie. Are you getting in the glad hand line, or are you just going to kind of stay in your seat?
I'm going to stay in my seat.
I think I'm with you.
I'm not a big...
Unless my seat's right there. If my seat's like two or three away from the edge, maybe I'll kind of lean over.
Absolutely. There are certain elected officials that I have met. I met Vice President Gore when he was running for president.
Okay.
I met President Reagan, played my violin for him when he was in Milwaukee when I was a little tyke. That was exciting. And there is a certain magnetism that surrounds whomever is holding those highest offices or even running for them. It's an exciting place to be in proximity to some of these folks.
You see it when a president comes, in my case, to Kenosha. There's people lining up on the road just to wave.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Yes.
Exactly.
We see what I would say a diminished-looking Mitch McConnell also following behind the president. Joe looks to be in good form, smiling, having a nice time.
Is that Steve Scalise back there on his phone?
It is Steve. Yep, Steve Scalise on his phone.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, did you see the cut to her?
I did not.
Out in full red MAGA hat, 45 on the side.
Oh, that's charming.
Trump 2020.
Who wears a hat? There's Gwen Moore. Oh, and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Boy, that's a shot, right? With Representative Moore standing right next to Marjorie Taylor Greene. What? I mean, apparently she's not going to shout out. She's just going to wear a hat. How disrespectful. I believe that was the hand of Gwen Moore giving President Joe Biden a pat on the shoulder. I mean, I guess I'd rather see her in the red getup than the bizarro faux white fur that she wore last year, looking a little bit like Cruella De Vil.
Oh, there she is. There's the congressman getting a nice camera shot. She's getting a picture of her own. I think she's going to go back and look at that.
Oh, I would imagine
so. You're at a concert.
So.
You know, you take the picture. You go back and look at those.
There she is.
Some topics that will be covered, some excerpts of the speech were released. Prescription drug costs.
Very briefly, folks, you're listening to Stuart J. Waddles and Maggie Dawn here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you'd like to text us questions, comments, thoughts that you have, 844-967-2789. Stu, you were just going to review some of the topics we expect the president to cover this.
Yeah, some excerpts have come out. Not mentioning Trump by name is what's expected, but some allusions based on some lines about age, kind of equating the two, making them seem like they're similar ages, where I think Trump is 4 years younger. But topics include lowering prescription drug costs, lead pipe removal, consumer tax credit programs, investments in affordable housing, optimistic outlooks on lower inflation and unemployment rates are things that he'll be talking about. The affordable housing, I'm looking forward to hearing more. Again, talking to Wisconsin voters, that's kind of what we're here for.
Absolutely. Here what we are see, they? Just very briefly, Representative Al Green of Texas with the president. Oh, the phones are...
Senator Joe Manchin.
Selfies abound.
So it's Manchin, Romney, and Biden taking about 15, 20 seconds here, glad-handing. Like to go back and watch that. I didn't get to see it, but it'd be nice to slow that down and kind of find out what they're all talking about there.
Indeed. Oh, if I could read lips.
Sure, someone online is going to go and make up what they say anyway and have some fun with that.
And Stuart, just for your information and for our viewers and listeners' information, Stuart's live feed is just a wee bit ahead of mine by about 5 to 6 seconds.
As is the one on our live stream. It will be disjointed from the audio.
So I'm giving out spoilers?
Yeah, spoilers. No. At least people know what's coming next. What I'm seeing, Anya, and what I'll narrate when I see folks, again, Al Green off the president's left shoulder, Chuck Schumer, being joined by some of the women of the Democratic caucus, again, wearing all white, very easily identifiable. There you have Joe Manchin off his left shoulder.
I don't want to give any spoilers, but Joe Biden just took somebody's phone and he's taking selfies. He knew how to change it from front-facing to rear-facing. Take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And like we talked earlier, just 65 minutes.
We're hearing a chant. Let's turn that up on you. Probably not the first chant that we'll hear. I mean, what I would really like to see, personally, is not just a speech that takes up the issues, but also decorum return to the body. Again, I would like to make America normal again. I'd like people to conduct themselves in an appropriate way in this moment. This is an incredibly important speech. It's incredibly important for the country, no matter who you may vote for. And let's conduct ourselves with some dignity. And there is Justice Jackson.
He went on down the line. Yeah, he's every single one of them that were there.
Chief Justice Roberts.
You know, and I didn't see come across, and I don't think that they let us know until now, but did you hear anything about the designated survivor?
I did not.
I looked earlier, and again, they haven't. They usually don't announce that until, I think, once we get going here.
So if you're not familiar with the designated survivor, here you have this moment where basically the folks that are in the line of succession within the United States governments are basically in one place. And that means that someone who can run the country ain't in the chamber in case the unthinkable and terrible happens. That is the, quote, designated survivor.
I was reading an account of someone who had gone through this process before, and it's extremely interesting. You get representatives from every single department showing up with a suitcase to Andrews. And then you have an option.
Their go bag, if you will.
In every single department, and you got an option. What, do you want to go up in the plane, or do you want to go somewhere else? Yeah. So that's how the designated survivor. This year, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona.
Interesting. I that's one of the topics that I would love to see the president address. and that is education and what has been going on in our schools. I've talked about it frequently on my show. I've had some guests on talking about voucher choice and charter programs and the defunding of public education in many ways, as well as the fact that it appears that a particularly virulent strain of Christian nationalism has basically attempted to take over public education. It'd be interesting to see if the president makes any direct comments about the book banning and the sort of suppression of anything that doesn't fit that Christian nationalist viewpoint during a speech tonight. I would expect at least some hat tip towards public education.
I believe
the president is taking the dais.
All right, and we'll resume after.
Yes, we will.
Talk about what's going on, give you the Republican response.
And he passes a copy of his speech to the Speaker of the House. I'll never forget the moment watching Nancy Pelosi tear that puppy up.
Customary tradition.
Yes, and one copy to the Vice President. A salute.
Anya, you starting the timer in there? 65 minutes?
Ready to go.
All right.
And here we go. A sustained standing ovation.
Good evening. Good evening.
8:26 p.m.
If I were smart, I'd go home now. Mr. Speaker, Madam Vice President, members of Congress, my fellow Americans, in January 1941, Franklin Roosevelt came to this chamber to speak to the nation, and he said, "I address you at a moment unprecedented in the history of the Union. Hitler was on the march. War was raging in Europe. President Roosevelt's purpose was to wake up Congress and alert the American people that this was no ordinary time. Freedom and democracy were under assault in the world. Tonight, I come to this same chamber to address the nation. Now, it's we who face an unprecedented moment in the history of the Union. And yes, my purpose tonight is to wake up the Congress and alert the American people that this is no ordinary moment either. Not since President Lincoln and the Civil War have freedom and democracy been under assault at home as they are today. What makes our moment rare is that freedom and democracy are under attack at both at home and overseas at the very same time. Overseas, Putin of Russia is on the march, invading Ukraine and sowing chaos throughout Europe and beyond. If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you he will not.
Well landed point.
But Ukraine can stop Putin. Ukraine can stop Putin if we stand with Ukraine and provide the weapons that needs to defend itself. That is all. That is all Ukraine is asking. They're not asking for American soldiers. In fact, there are no American soldiers at war in Ukraine, and I'm determined to keep it that way. But now, assistance to Ukraine is being blocked by those who want to walk away from our world leadership. It wasn't long ago when a Republican president named Ronald Reagan thundered, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." Now my predecessor, a former Republican president, tells Putin, quote, "Do whatever the hell you want." That's a quote. A former president actually said that, bowing down to a Russian leader. I think it's outrageous, it's dangerous, and it's unacceptable.
Mike Johnson nodding at that point. The Speaker of the House nodding at that point. A direct criticism.
As a founding member of NATO, The military alliance of democratic nations created after World War II to prevent war and keep the peace. And today, we've made NATO stronger than ever. Welcome Finland to the alliance last year. And just this morning, Sweden officially joined, and their minister is here tonight. Can I stand up?
In the First Lady's box, welcome. The Prime Minister of Sweden.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. And they know how to fight. Mr. Prime Minister, welcome to NATO, the strongest military alliance the world has ever seen. I say this to Congress. We have to stand up to Putin. Send me a bipartisan national security bill. History is literally watching. History is watching. If the United States walks away, it will put Ukraine at risk. Europe is at risk. The free world will be at risk, emboldening others to do what they wish to do us harm. My message to President Putin, who I've known for a long time, is simple. We will not walk away. We will not bow down. I will not bow down.
Drawing some sharp contrast here.
In a literal sense, history is watching. History is watching. Just like history watched 3 years ago on January 6th. When insurrectionists stormed this very Capitol and placed the dagger to the throat of American democracy. Many of you are here on that darkest of days. We all saw with our own eyes the insurrectionists were not patriots. They'd come to stop the peaceful transfer of power, to overturn the will of the people. January 6th lies about the 2020 election and the plots to steal the election posed a great, gravest threat to U.S. democracy since the Civil War. But they failed. America stood. America stood strong, and democracy prevailed. We must be honest. The threat to democracy must be defended. My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6th. I will not do that. This is the moment to speak the truth and to bury the lies. Here's the simple truth. You can't love your country only when you win. As I've done ever since being elected to office, I ask all of you, without regard to party, to join together and defend democracy. Remember your oath of office is defending us all threats, foreign and domestic. Respect. Respect free and fair elections. Restore trust in our institutions. And make clear political violence has absolutely no place, no place in America, zero place. Again. It's not hyperbole to suggest history is watching. We're watching. Your children and grandchildren will read about this day and what we do. History is watching another assault on freedom. Joining us tonight is Latoya Beasley, a social worker from Birmingham, Alabama. 14 months ago, she and her husband welcomed a baby girl thanks to the miracle of IVF. She scheduled treatments to have that second child. But the Alabama Supreme Court shut down IVF treatments across the state, unleashed by a Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. She was told her dream would have to wait. What her family had got through should never have happened. Unless Congress acts, it could happen again. So tonight, let's stand up for families like hers. To my friends across the aisle, don't keep this waiting any longer. Guarantee the right to IVF. Guarantee it nationwide.
Like most Americans, I believe Roe v. Wade got it right. I thank Vice President Harris for being an incredible leader defending reproductive freedom and so much more. Thank you. My predecessor came to office determined to see Roe v. Wade overturned. He's the reason it was overturned, and he brags about it. Look at the chaos that has resulted. Joining us tonight is Kate Cox, a wife and mother from Dallas. She's become pregnant again and had a fetus of a fatal condition. Her doctor told Kate that her own life and her ability to have children in the future were at risk if she didn't act. Because Texas law banned her ability to act, Kate and her husband had to leave the state to get what she needed. What her family got through should have never happened as well, but it's happening in too many others. There are state laws banning the freedom to choose, criminalizing doctors, forcing survivors of rape and incest to leave their states to get the treatment they need. Many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. My God, what freedom else would you take away? Look, it's a decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court majority wrote the following, and with all due respect, justices, women are not without electoral power. Electoral or political power. You're about to realize just how much you get right about that.
The justice sit stoically.
At least we're not seeing head shaking.
Clearly. Those bragging about overturning Roe v. Wade have no clue about the power of women. But they found out when reproductive freedom was on the ballot. We won in 2022 and 2020, and we'll win again in 2024.
The Women's Caucus sitting as a block and rising in a standing ovation.
If you, the American people, send me a Congress that supports the right to choose, I promise you, I'll restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again. Folks, America cannot go back. I'm here tonight to show what I believe is the way forward, because I know how far we've come. 4 years ago, next week, before I came to office, the country was hit by the worst pandemic and the worst economic crisis in a century. Remember the fear, record losses? Remember the spikes in crime and the murder rate, raging virus that took more than 1 million American lives of loved ones, millions left behind? A mental health crisis of isolation and loneliness. A president, my predecessor, failed the most basic presidential duty that he owes to American people, the duty to care. I think that's unforgivable. I came to office determined to get us through one of the toughest periods in the nation's history. We have. It doesn't make news, but in news in 1,000 cities and towns, the American people are writing the greatest comeback story never told. So let's tell the story here. Tell it here and now. America's comeback is building a future of American possibilities, building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down, investing in all America, in all Americans, to make sure everyone has a fair shot, and we leave no one behind. The pandemic no longer controls our lives. The vaccines that saved us from COVID are now being used to beat cancer, turning setback into comeback. That's what America does. That's what America does. Folks, my inherited economy is on the brink. Now our economy is literally the envy of the world. 15 million new jobs in just 3 years, a record. A record. Unemployment. at 50-year lows. A record 16 million Americans are starting small businesses, and each one is a literal act of hope. With historic job growth and small business growth for Black and Hispanics and Asian Americans, 800,000 new manufacturing jobs in America and counting. Where is it written we can't be the manufacturing capital of the world? We are, we will. More people have health insurance today. More people have health insurance today than ever before. The racial wealth gap is as small as it's been in 20 years. Wages keep going up, inflation keeps coming down. Inflation has dropped from 9% to 3%, the lowest in the world, and tending lower. The landing is and will be soft. And now, instead of importing foreign products and exporting American jobs, we're exporting American products and creating American jobs. Right here in America, where they belong. And it takes time, but the American people are beginning to feel it. Consumer studies show consumer confidence is soaring. Buy America has been the law of the land since the 1930s. Past administrations, including my predecessor, including some Democrats as well in the past, failed to buy American. Not anymore. On my watch, federal projects that you fund, like helping build American roads, bridges, and highways, will be made with American products and built by American workers. Creating good-paying American jobs. And thanks to our CHIPS and Science Act, the United States is investing more in research and development than ever before. During the pandemic, a shortage of semiconductors, chips, that drove up the price of everything from cell phones to automobiles. And by the way, we invented those chips right here in America. Well, instead of having to import them, private companies are now investing billions of dollars to build new chip factories here in America, creating tens of thousands of jobs, many of those jobs paying $100,000 a year and don't require a college degree. In fact, my policies have attracted $650 billion in private sector investment in clean energy, advanced manufacturing, creating tens of thousands of jobs here in America. And thanks to our bipartisan infrastructure law, 46,000 new projects have been announced all across your communities. And by the way, I noticed some of you have strongly voted against it, or they're cheering on that money coming in. I like it.
Well said.
I'm with you. And if any of you don't want that money in your district, just let me know. Modernizing our roads and bridges, ports and airports, public transit systems. Removing poisonous lead pipes so every child can drink clean water without risk of brain damage. Providing affordable high-speed internet for every American, no matter where you live, urban, suburban, or rural communities, in red states and blue states. Record investments in tribal communities because of my investment in a family farm. Because I invested in family farms led by my Secretary of Agriculture, who knows more about this than anybody I know, we're better able to stay in the family for those farms and their children and grandchildren won't have to leave home to make a living. It's transformative. The great comeback story is Belvidere, Illinois, home to an auto plant for nearly 60 years. Before I came to office, the plant was on its way to shutting down. Thousands of workers feared for their livelihoods. Hope was fading. Then I was elected to office, and we raised the Belvidere repeatedly with auto companies, knowing unions would make all the difference. The UAW worked like hell to keep the plant open and get these jobs back, and together we succeeded. Instead of auto factories shutting down, auto factories reopening, a new state-of-the-art battery factory is being built to power those cars there at the same time. The folks of Belvedere, I say, instead of your town being left behind, your community is moving forward again. Because instead of watching auto jobs of the future go overseas, 4,000 union jobs with higher wages are building the future in Belvedere right here in America. Here tonight is UAW President Sean Fain, a great friend and a great labor leader. Sean, where are you? Stand up. And Dawn Sims, a third-generation worker, UAW worker at Belvedere. Sean, I was proud to be the first president to stand on the picket line, and today, Dawn has a good job in her hometown, providing stability for her family and pride and dignity as well. Showing once again, Wall Street didn't build America. They're not bad guys. They didn't build it, though. The middle class built the country, and unions built the middle class. I say to the American people, when America gets knocked down, we get back up. We keep going. That's America. That's you, the American people. It's because of you America's coming back. It's because of you our future is brighter. It's because of you that tonight we can proudly say the state of our union is strong and getting stronger. Tonight, I want to talk about the future of possibilities that we can build together. A future where the days of trickle-down economics are over, and the wealthy and the biggest corporations no longer get all the tax breaks. And by the way, I understand corporations. I come from a state that has more corporations invested than every one of your states in the state of the United States combined. And I represented it for 36 years. I'm not anti-corporation, but I grew up in a home where trickle-down economics didn't put much on my dad's kitchen table. That's why I determined to turn things around so middle class does well. When they do well, the poor have a way up, and the wealthy still do very well. We all do well. And there's more to do to make sure you're feeling the benefits of all we're doing. Americans pay more for prescription drugs than anywhere in the world. It's wrong, and I'm ending it. With a law that I proposed and signed, not one of you Republican buddies voted for it, we finally beat Big Pharma. Instead of paying $400 a month or thereabouts for insulin with diabetes, and it only costs 10 bucks to make, they only get paid 35 a month now and still make a healthy profit. And I want to, but what to do next? I want to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month for every American who needs it. Everyone. For years, people have talked about it, but finally we got it done and gave Medicare the power to negotiate lower prices on prescription drugs, just like the VA is able to do for veterans. That's not just saving seniors money. It's saving taxpayers money. We cut the federal deficit by $160 billion. Because Medicare will no longer have to pay those exorbitant prices to Big Pharma. This year, Medicare is negotiating lower prices for some of the costliest drugs on the market. to treat everything from heart disease to arthritis. It's now time to go further and give Medicare the power to negotiate lower prices for 500 different drugs over the next decade. They're making a lot of money, guys. And they'll still be extremely profitable. We'll not only save lives, it will save taxpayers another $200 billion. Starting next year, the same law caps total prescription drug costs for seniors on Medicare at $2,000 a year. Even for expensive cancer drugs that cost $10,000, $12,000, $15,000. Now, I want to cap prescription drug costs at $2,000 a year for everyone. Folks, I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, but if you want to get an Air Force One and fly to Toronto, Berlin, Moscow, I mean, excuse me, and it, well, even Moscow, probably. And bring your prescription with you, and I promise you I'll get it for you for 40% the cost you're paying now. Same company, same drug, same place. Folks, the Affordable Care Act, the old Obamacare, is still a very big deal. Over 100 million of you can no longer be denied health insurance because of pre-existing condition. But my predecessor and many in this chamber want to take this prescription drug away by repealing the Affordable Care Act. I'm not going to let that happen. We stopped you 50 times before and we'll stop you again. In fact, I'm not only protecting it, I'm expanding it. The enacted tax credits of $800 per person per year reduce health care costs for millions of working families. That tax credit expires next year. I want to make that savings permanent. To state the obvious, women are more than half our population. But research on women's health has always been underfunded. That's why we're launching the first-ever White House initiative on women's health research, led by Jill, doing an incredible job as First Lady. We'll pass my plan for $12 billion to transfer women's health research and benefit millions of lives all across America. I know the cost of housing is so important to you. If inflation keeps coming down, mortgage rates will come down as well, and the Fed acknowledges that. But I'm not waiting. I want to provide an annual tax credit that will give Americans $400 a month for the next 2 years as mortgage rates come down, to put toward their mortgages when they buy their first home or trade up for a little more space. Just for 2 years. And my administration is also eliminating title insurance on federally backed mortgages. When you refinance your home, you can save $1,000 or more as a consequence. For millions of renters, we're cracking down on big landlords who use antitrust law, who break antitrust laws by price fixing and driving up rents. We've cut red tape so builders can get federally financing, which is already helping build a record 1.7 million new housing units nationwide. Now pass and build and renovate 2 million affordable homes and bring those rents down. To remain the strongest economy in the world, we need to have the best education system in the world. And I, like I suspect all of you, want to give a child, every child, a good start by providing access to preschool for 3 and 4 years old. You know, I think I pointed out last year that children coming from broken homes where there's no books, not read to, not spoken to very often, start school, kindergarten or first grade, hearing, having heard a million fewer words spoken. Well, studies show that children who go to preschool are nearly 50% more likely to finish high school, go on to earn a 2- and 4-year degree, no matter what their background is. I met a year and a half ago with the leaders of the Business Roundtable. They were mad that they were angry, I think, well, they were discussing why I wanted to spend money on education. I pointed out to them, as vice president, I met with over 182 of those folks. Don't hold me the exact number. And I asked them what they need most, the CEOs. And you've had the same experience on both sides of the aisle. They say a better educated workforce, right? So I looked at them, and I say, I come from Delaware. DuPont used to be the 8th largest corporation in the world. And every new enterprise they bought, they educated the workforce to that enterprise. But none of you do that anymore. Why are you angry with me providing you the opportunity for the best educated workforce in the world? And they all looked at me and said, I think you're right. I want to expand high-quality tutoring and summer learning to see that every child learns to read by third grade. I'm also connecting local businesses and high schools so students get hands-on experience and a path to a good-paying job, whether or not they go to college. And I want to make sure the college is more affordable. Let's continue increasing the Pell Grants to working and middle-class families and increase record investments in HBCUs and minority-serving institutions, including Hispanic institutions. And I was told I couldn't universally just change the way in which we dealt with student loans. I fixed 2 student loan programs that already existed to reduce the burden of student debt for nearly 4 million Americans, including nurses, firefighters, and others in public service. Like Keenan Jones, a public educator from Minnesota, who's here with us tonight. Keenan, where are you? Keenan, thank you. He's educated hundreds of students so they can go to college. Now he's able to help, after debt forgiveness, get his own daughter to college.
You're listening to special coverage on WAUK Jackson, WMDX Columbus, WGBW Denmark, and WLCX La Crosse.
Start a family. While we're at it, I want the public school teachers a raise. By the way, the first couple of years, we cut the deficit. Now, let me speak to the question of fundamental fairness for all Americans. I've been delivering real results in fiscally responsible ways. We've already cut the federal deficit. We've already cut the federal deficit over $1 trillion. I signed the bipartisan deal to cut another $1 trillion in the next decade. It's my goal to cut the federal deficit another $3 trillion by making big corporations very wealthy, finally beginning to pay their fair share. Look, I'm a capitalist. If you want to make or can make a million or millions of bucks, that's great. Just pay your fair share in taxes. A fair tax code. It's how we invest things to make this country great — healthcare, education, defense, and so much more. But here's the deal. The last administration enacted a $2 trillion tax cut, overwhelmingly benefit the top 1%, the very wealthy and the biggest corporations, and exploded the federal deficit.